Welcome to Public Safety Talk Radio, the podcast for all of our heroes in public safety, including law enforcement professionals, firefighters, EMTs, corrections officers, healthcare workers, and more. The show is produced by the POCUA and is founded upon its Soundness Initiative. This episode is sponsored by the Finest Service Organization, a provider of line-of-duty death home protection through many of our POCUA institutions. I am Ken Bader, your host for Public Safety Talk Radio, and I'm bringing back one of my most fun guests. You may remember him from Fire Edge. That was the name of that episode. I'm bringing back Chief Dave Robertson, and we're going to talk more about how we can help our first responders and how we can build up their careers and do some great things out there. Chief, welcome back.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it.
Oh, I get a sir this morning. How about that?
Well, anybody that is going to give me a sequel, right?
I appreciate that. How about you don't call me sir, you call me Ken. I don't call you Chief, I call you Dave.
That sounds perfect. I'm even at cities this time.
Yeah, and you've got a different background. I hear you moved. You're still in Ontario, but you're on the other side of the border from Detroit, I think.
I am. Lambton Shores is actually where the deputy chief of training. I don't live in Lambton Shores. I'm in this beautiful little area outside of Sarnia, Ontario, called Bright's Grove. I can look out my window here. Lake Huron is right there. It's a gorgeous little town. The last time we spoke, I believe I was in Kelowna, British Columbia.
Yeah, that's right.
And I had moved there for a couple of reasons. One of them was I had this idea I was going to open up my own fire academy.
Mm.
And
that died a horrible death.
Budget is what it came down to.
Well, I'm sorry that didn't work out, but let's talk a little bit about hiring practices you're an expert career builder for firefighters, and I would assume most first responders. And it's always been my belief that, you know, we need to continue to raise the level of our first responders, whether it's, you know, here in the United States or Canada, that they should be trained and seen on the same level of a doctor or a lawyer and so forth. And I don't think we're quite there yet. But, you know, you do a lot with hiring practices. You know, what do you suggest that we should be doing out there in the first responder world?
Well, you know, it's interesting because if your listeners are, if they're Canadian and they hear that I've got an American take on things, they'd be concerned there and vice versa.
Right.
So, you know, there's some operational differences in first response Canada to the States, how we police, how fire actually tactically does things. But practices are near identical across the board. So when I speak to this, it's very much North America wide. You know, so the typical, I think context first is important, and what's done typically first. And while I have worked with some people going down the EMS track and have had conversations with people going down the police track, most of my stuff, as you can tell by the axe, most of my stuff is related, right?
I saw the axe and I immediately thought, you know, he's got to be a detective.
Yeah, exactly. So in terms of fire, what the fire service does is we've got our minimum requirements. That's common across all first response. You need certification ABC, and depending on the town, you know, one town might say something as simple as high school diploma and a firefighter academy. And the town right next to it could say you need a college degree in fire science. You need these three fire related certifications and fire academy. So there are some differences municipality to municipality, but generally speaking, there's kind of a fundamental set of certifications. And then the candidate is with the reality of it's a hard job to get. So they start building the resume. They start stacking their resume a little bit, more certifications, more volunteer time, that sort of thing. But the thing about that as well is you know, I'll ask a candidate, so you want to stack your resume? Yes, I do. So you need some extra certifications? Well, yes, I do. Well, what certifications are you talking about? And they'll say, well, you know, I'm going to do rope rescue. Okay, good. I'm going to do water rescue. Okay. I'm going to maybe a little more emergency medical. Okay. And they come up with the same six or seven certifications that everybody's
resume looks the same way.
Everybody's resume looks the same. So what we do in the fire service is we get these essentially, they're whitewashed by the time they get to the interview stage. Their application is often graded. How many years are you in your current position? Do you have any time in a directly related field? How long have you been doing volunteer work? So they'll grade, essentially, might do aptitude tests. They might do agility tests, but even those, you know, the same kind of thing. Okay, I've got to take an aptitude test. And you can literally go on Amazon and in 5 minutes have a stack of study guides that are directly related, so you can nail the aptitude test. It takes work, but again, everybody comes out whitewashed. Anybody that's got a 70% or over, 75 or over on the aptitude test, you move along. Pass the agility test, everybody passes, you move them along. So we get to this interview stage with this whitewashed candidate. And culturally in the fire service, we do this little finger wagging. So, okay, so the job is won or lost in the interview room. Right? This is really where we get to know you. So, okay, cool. So I should practice. You should practice your interview skills. Okay, great. We get them into the interview room thinking that this is the show. And what's our first question? So why don't you tell me about yourself? Okay, so you're 23, right? And while I am 110% behind us expanding our candidate pool, the reality is still 84% white males. So you're a 23-year-old white male, and somebody says, tell me about yourself. Well, I play some hockey and I've taken these certifications, and they basically regurgitate their resume back to you.
Right.
And they don't know enough to tell you about their character.
Mm-hmm.
And we okay that, right? So we move on to the next question. So where do you see yourself in 5 years? It's like, okay, well, I remember getting asked that question when I was applying to be a fry cook at Harvey's, the local burger. Like, seriously, I'm 16 years old, so where do you see yourself in five years? I'm surprised I zipped up my fly to come to this.
And then they look down to make sure.
Just to double check. Right? We need to set the stage for them to be able to reveal their character. And we're not. We're setting a flimsy stage.
Yeah.
And the fallout of that flimsy stage is they all know the script now. Tell me about yourself. Well, make sure you tell them how much you've been working at the extra stuff. And make sure you tell them about your volunteer work. Mm-hmm. Right. And we'll, okay. So now we're whitewashing them in the interview room.
Yeah. So let's dig into that character piece a little bit.
Yes.
Because truth be told, I don't know if this came out in our first discussion in the other episode, but for a very, very, very brief time, and I stress the word brief, I actually did in my early 20s, before I became a stockbroker, trained to be a firefighter in the Chicagoland area. So, you know, I got a little bit of an inkling of what's needed and how hard a job this is. And back in that day, I was in much, much better shape, and I passed all of the physical stuff with flying colors. But then I got into the interview room, and fortunately for the fire departments and me, you know, my arrogance and, you know, some of the things came out that I was like, you know, this job isn't for you. Yeah, just because of your mentality and so forth. So, you know, I believe that, you know, in all of North America, for all first responders, yeah, that what we call in the business world when it comes to culture building, not only the IQ, but the EQ. You know, the IQ, yes, the intelligence, and the EQ, the emotional intelligence. Now, yeah, I always seem to have the one, but even here in my 50s, yeah, that EQ is really still in question for me.
That one's a struggle, isn't it? So yeah.
How do you get to, especially, you know, with a 23-year-old, yeah, how do you get to grade that a little bit? How do you get a little bit deeper into, okay, what really makes this guy or gal tick?
I think the interview construct needs to be robustly, critically analyzed. I don't mean, hey, who here part of the interview panel? That the hand raise selection is evident in a lot of fire departments still. Who wants to be in the interview panel? Oh, okay. So why don't you five, we're going to meet at station one at admin next shift for a couple of hours. We're going to go over the interview questions. And that is their level of robust analysis or critical analysis of their interview questions. So I think that's one of the things that we need to do is we need to dig in deep. What are we really about? Not we swear to protect the blah, blah, blah. And our vision is to make sure that our staff are blah, blah, blah. I mean, really, really in here, right? What are we about as a fire department? Okay. And that means, and that should start molding the kind of person that we want to see in our uniform. Not, well, they've got to pass this. And can you see how quickly they can revert back to, well, we really want someone who's in good shape, right?
Okay. Yeah.
We've got a good work history. So we're fostering that. We need a series. It's got to be a paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's got to be a serious shift, which of course, you know, any level of paradigm shift, cultural shift takes time and takes a knucklehead like me to do 78 podcasts to maybe somebody is listening. It's not an easy, it's a turning of the ship kind of thing, right? But to go back to answering your question, you know, how do you set the stage for revealing character? I think we get away from the old questions. I think we seriously look at our interview construct. I believe that we need to diversify our interview panels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I work with a lot of people outside of my public safety job, as you know, with clients where I've guided them over the years, and they say, hey, I've got an interview coming up. And I can actually say with confidence, okay, so you're probably going to have HR there, maybe a union rep, one chief, maybe two, and a captain or a firefighter. And they'll look back on their email and say, oh my God, you're exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if we're constantly just, you know, we need to change what the interview room even looks like.
Yeah.
Right. Who's actually there? How are they training those interviewers? City of Vancouver in Canada, they're actually required to go through not checkbox, but significant and robust diversity, equality, and inclusion training in the context of interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
They actually they have to take a class on the biases that they need to recognize might be coming out as they're grading the interviewee, both the unconscious and the conscious biases, and how to pivot away from those biases once they recognize them. City of Vancouver's got that kind of thing right, but that's not the norm in our fire service culture. Mm-hmm. The norm is this very pedestrian kind of interview construct. So going back to your question, how do we set the stage for them to reveal their character? I think we need to kind of look at ourselves first. What's our character? We need to look at our character first, right? And you know, turning the mirror on yourself, so many of us in the fire service buy into the mythological creature that the firefighter is, right? The one that's really pushed by media discourse, and the Hollywood machine that you and I were talking about before you started recording, you know, it is very much some chest thumping or the silverback, you know, gorilla kind of stuff, right? And so we say, well, the kind of character that we you're broad shouldered, even if they're women, they're broad shouldered, and it's all about pride, and you know, yeah. You know. Well, that's not a very that you're not. you're not taking a critical look at yourself as a department. So you need to kind of have the EQ culturally to be able to take a look at yourself like that. And once you get that idea of what a character looks like, then you can kind of say, okay, what questions do we ask in order to see the kind of person that would fill our uniform?
Yeah.
I like seeing people struggle. I'm going to answer your question kind of twice. That was
yeah, go ahead.
And the second part of that is the actual questions. I like seeing people struggle. I like seeing a candidate really worm their way past what the open secret is about what the script is in that interview room. It's the same damn 20 questions that we ask, you know, across North America. The scenarios are essentially all the same. They're very fundamental fire scenarios, a couple of fundamental character-based scenarios, you know, and all the other pedestrian ones.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if I could, you know, can I give you one of the questions? I'm just pulling up one from a candidate.
Sure, go for it.
Okay.
I might even answer it.
Okay, fair enough. So I believe in giving deeper scenarios for candidates instead of just a one or two sentence question. You are assigned to a fire station with a crew that consists of a 47-year-old white male. He's the captain. Yourself. There's another younger white male who's in the fire service for about 5 years, so they're still fairly new. And there's one person of East Indian descent. Okay, very realistic scenario, especially in Canada, because we have a lot of connections with East India. You start noticing very minor verbal comments from the captain to the East Indian firefighter. The comments are nothing glaring, just little things like about spicy foods and other mundane cultural commentary. Pretty soon, you notice that the five-year firefighter is starting to jump in on some of these comments as well. How do you handle this situation?
That's an interesting question. And while I've never fought any fires, I know a little bit about culture.
I see that. Yes, you do. Absolutely.
You know, that's an interesting question in that if you go by what the law is and what they train in so-called harassment in the workplace is, you know, part of the definition, which is really, really nebulous, is the person who is possibly being harassed is what's happening, welcome or not welcome. And so by that definition, it can go many different ways. Sometimes, and you know this as well or better than I do, sometimes you get on some teams and there's so much closeness and understanding is that, you know, you don't care. You know, you talk about my baldness, you know, we talk about this person's religion and we're joking about everything. And it's actually to some, and you never know with anybody, you know, for that Eastern Indian, the fact that they're making fun of his or her eating habits, that actually may make that person feel welcome. You know, it's like, hey, you know, they're joking with me like they're joking with the captain, you know, for, you know, putting stuff in his hair that nobody else does. You know, that may actually not feel like harassment. That might actually feel like a welcoming type of thing.
I think that's very fair. Yeah.
But in the other extreme, and I've seen this as well, you know, somebody could just say, you know, hey, you know, you're looking good today. And somebody could not find that welcoming and see that as harassment. Well, what do you mean I look good? You know, what do you want to, you know, take me in the back? You know, what the hell does that mean? And, you know, I'm going to call you, you know, I'm going to call you out on harassment. So, you know, it's a very long answer to what may seem like a straightforward question. But yeah, I think that the answer that I would give, and I would hope that somebody would give, is as a team member, I would actually talk to the Eastern Indian colleague of mine and say, hey, does that bother you? I mean, you know, I know that we're just trying to rib you and you're part of the team and everything, but does that bother you? And that person may say, no, I don't give a crap. You know, I don't really care. You know, and someone says, yeah, it does bother me a little bit. And then you say, you know what? You know, maybe we should, you know, lay off, you know, so-and-so because we're pushing the envelope too much. I mean, I'll give you one other example from my own life is, you know, I'm Polish. I'm a Polish descent. You know, my wife and her family is German. Yeah, I can remember, you know, several Christmases, Thanksgivings, Easters, or whatever, where my brother-in-laws would say, "Hey, let's see what the Polak wants," you know. And you know what? It never bothered me.
Right.
It never bothered me. You know, so some people would say, "Wow, that's, you know, really racist. That's really terrible that they would point out, you know, your heritage and joke about it." It's like, I don't care. You know, yeah. To me, I knew where they were coming from. You know, I could just as easily make a joke about their German descent, and they would have to take it because they've created this aura of, okay, now this has become acceptable. So we can't be pissed about that. So, you know, the answer, I'm giving you a very long answer to a question.
It's a good answer. It depends. I think you're doing a great job of kind of making my point.
Mm-hmm.
Can you feel how quickly you could go down rabbit holes? Maybe not the right term because that often denotes something negative, but how you can kind of ignite something very real within yourself. You start making connections and, you know, and you eventually give an answer rather than, you know, rather than putting my hands are in front of me. And well, my answer is ABC plus two is four, you know, plus I like fish. Oh, okay. Yes, yes, yes. Right. And so now you and I started off conversational because we know each other.
Yeah.
That kind of goes back to how I guide candidates as well as, you know, remember, this is a conversation, but back to the fire department that's doing the interviews, guys, you got to remember it's a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This person is not a series of check boxes. And this is where we are dropping the ball and looking at character specific to that answer. You know, I mean, and I don't want to go that it would be going down the rabbit hole of dissecting this answer too long. But if I was to change that two ways, if I was to say the firefighter of East Indian descent has been on the fire department for 20 years, that paints a certain picture and how they would answer. Oh, that me and Cat and Joe we're good friends. I rib him about, you know, XYZ all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, now I change that and I say the person of East Indian descent is on probation. What do you think they're going to say on probation when you say, are you bothered by that? What do you think your answer is going to be?
No, because they want the job. They want to fit in.
Right. So I'm forcing you back into answer this question. What would you do? Is that all you're going to do? Hey, does that bother you? No. Okay. Is that all you're going to do? Is that good enough? Does that really reveal character? Are you going to talk to the captain?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like it's a hostile atmosphere?
Yeah.
Because if you feel like it's a hostile atmosphere,
then it's a hostile atmosphere.
It's more legal definition of hostile, not, you know, not fisticuffs hostile. But if you feel it's a hostile, it technically is.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are going down the harassment rabbit hole. How are you going to handle that? What do we say in first response all the time? You've talked to hundreds of first responders. Well, you know, one of the first things I'm just going to talk to the person that's kind of doing the problem. We're going to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, do you have the EQ enough as a candidate to say, I'm going to talk to the captain? Well, wait a minute. That's kind of ballsy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to do that. Okay. Well, I'm going to talk to the 5-year guy. Well, they're past probation. So you can see how this is a struggle. Okay. You should struggle with an answer because this scenario that I gave you, you could see that playing out for real, couldn't you?
Yeah.
So it's a real scenario. It's really a lot of gray areas. And it forces the candidate to, holy crap, think in that interview chair, to struggle, to give you some ums and ahs, to actually have to say for a minute, do you guys mind if I just think about this for a couple minutes? Because that's a great question. Instead of 2 + 2 = 4 plus I like fish. Well, these are not answers.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I'm getting at.
This has been part one of hiring practices in public safety. Tune in next week for part two of Hiring Practices in Public Safety, again with Chief Dave Robinson.
Public Safety Talk Radio was produced by the POCUA. The
POCUA is a consortium of financial institutions serving law enforcement, as well as other first responders and public safety professionals. To learn more about our association and to find one of our credit unions or service providers near you, go to www.policecreditunions.com. And always remember, if you aren't working with one of our POCUA credit unions, you're just banking with an institution that just so happens to serve first responders. As a public safety professional, you and your family deserve better. Find a POCUA credit union today.